25 years after the Beatles broke up, a new single. That single was released, Free as a Bird, it was called, and the story of how it was put together was just amazing. Yoko Ono turned over some recordings that John Lennon had made at home in 1977. The three surviving Beatles say it was a very emotional process putting it together, but very rewarding as well. It's a great song. We're talking with Dave Politis about missing persons, hundreds, perhaps thousands of people all over the world disappearing, just vanishing under very strange circumstances. Dave has been pulling together bits and pieces of information to show us the similarities and the connections between these cases. In hour four, we'll open up the phone lines and get your questions and comments. In this hour, though, we're going to delve into some other connections that Dave has made that'll chill you right to the bone. We'll be right back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Dave Politis, back when you and I first got to know each other years ago and interviewed you for the program, I mean, your primary interest was Bigfoot, and maybe we'll have time to touch on that later. But because of that research, being the diligent investigator that you are, you spent a lot of time out in the woods, and I'm sure a lot of that time by yourself. Do you do that anymore?
I make a huge effort to never do it. But if I am out there, I do have a GPS transponder, I have a firearm, sometimes I have a sat phone. I don't want to be a statistic, and I don't want somebody else to write about me disappearing. Then again, I do think that a lot of things in the wild are easier found when you're alone. And I want to practice what I preach, and I would say that 99% of the time I have somebody with me.
Has there ever been a case, any of these incidents that you've investigated, where more than one person has been taken?
There are a few stories from I'd say 1930s or 40s in Pennsylvania, where two kids, 4 to 5 years old, disappeared at the same time and were found deceased weeks later and in the same location. Unexplainable. But it's very, very rare.
I would think if I were going to go hiking with three or four friends or something out into a national park, Yosemite or something like that, I might even consider being tethered. I don't know if there's anybody ever been taken, and not many people hike with being tethered to someone, but it makes me wonder if that would work.
Logic doesn't seem to play a big part in this because, I mean, just Yosemite, to give you a quick case, is there was a man that could barely walk. He was on crutches. He was elderly. I think he was in his early 70s. And he walked a couple hundred yards from a parking lot to sit on a boulder next to this slow-moving creek that was a couple inches deep. And the family said, "Okay, we're going to go take a walk." And he said, "Oh, take your time. I'm not going to move. I can't move. I'll be right here." They came back in 35 minutes. He was gone. A huge search. They never found him. There's actually a lot of stories like that where logic doesn't have a role in this.
It makes you wonder if there's some sort of a mind control aspect to this. And I know you don't want to get too far out, but just for the purposes of conversation, where people do things completely contrary, not only to logic, but contrary to their normal patterns. It seems like something might influence their decision making.
Except that, say, in the case of Miles Robinson that we talked about in Wingen, I don't think his decision making played any role in what happened because he couldn't have gone from A to B under his own power. And the man I just told you about in Yosemite, I don't believe he could go anywhere under his own power. I have had very, very few people discuss these type of cases because they don't fit within their logic profile. I've had other people from law enforcement say, "Well, you're ignoring some major points. People do disappear in the woods, and sometimes they're not found." And okay, but you have to stop right there and say, "Yes, but a canine in most instances would be able to track the people, at least partially. And in most instances, you put a helicopter up with FLIR, you should be able to get some results." And people don't. People normally fit within a grid pattern that's designed for search and rescue, where they know, let's just say a 3-year-old isn't going to go more than a mile and a half. They aren't going to go more than 400 feet uphill, and they're going to be found in less than 2 days. That's like a 99% profile hit. Well, the reason they got to that is because the number of cases that they've done that fit within that grouping. Now, the unusual part of it is that there's a certain number of these cases that fit so far outside the bounds of it that nobody wants to discuss it.
Has anyone ever seen it happen or seen it in progress and seen it thwarted because they noticed something weird was going on? Or I guess if something like that were to happen, you wouldn't hear about it. It wouldn't be reported.
Well, and that goes to that what I said earlier about 100% success rate. You don't get the people coming back and say, a bear dragged me away, and at the last minute, it let loose of me. And the closest thing we have of that is small kids making these statements about a big doggy or some other type of animal that they saw or that bothered them. And I mean, we were talking about the Atterdero case beforehand. If I could just go into that real quick.
Sure.
Well, Jared was a 3-year-old boy, and his parents owned a resort up the Poudre Valley in Colorado, in Larimer County. And October 2nd, 1999, Alan Atterdero had a group of Christian singles at his resort, and they asked him if they could just go down the road a little ways, very very short ride, and go to the fish hatchery. And he said, "Sure, that's an easy ride." And they invited his daughter, who was, I think, 5 or 6 at the time, maybe even a little older. And then at the last minute, Jared saw his sister was going and said, "Well, I want to go too," and begged his dad, and his dad said, "Okay, and they said that they'd look after him. Well, this Christian singles group goes down to the fish ponds, and at the last minute, they decide, we're going to go up the road here a little ways meaning like 20 miles, and they're going to go walk on this trail in the middle of the woods with Alan's kids without his approval. Make a long story short, Jared gets ahead of these people on the trail, way ahead of them, and these singles decide that, I guess, that they're not going to take control of the kid. They're just going to let him run. And he goes up the trail, and he runs into two fishermen that are by themselves. And he walks up to them as they're on the river, and he asks them if there are any bears around here. And the fishermen say, "No, there's no bears. We've never seen a bear. We've come up here for years. There's none. Don't worry about it." Okay. And he takes off walking down the trail. And I tell people this story, and they say, "Are these fishermen idiots? They let a 3-year-old just walk into the woods by themselves without stopping the kid and saying, 'Hey, wait right here for your parents. Are you lost?'" But they let him go. That was the last time anybody saw Jared alive. And there was a huge search and rescue effort to find this boy. I will say that. One of the things that I've written about in past books is the crash of aircraft in conjunction with searches in these cases. And I write about 5 of them. This is one of them. The Air Force brought in a helicopter, and right when it started to search for Jared, something happened and it crashed. Everyone survived, but it was taken out of commission. And the area of the search was stopped momentarily while they had to do the search and rescue for this. So as Alan Atterdero, the dad, is at search and rescue headquarters a couple days into the search effort, they bring in some new canines, and one of the search people says, "Hey, we need the scent bag." And they reach under this cabinet, and they have this giant bag that they pull out. And Alan goes, "Wow, it's a big bag. What do you got in there?" And they go, "Oh, here." Now, for 3 days, this search has been going on using the scent of the scent bag. And this is a 3-year-old boy. Alan looks inside, and they got a pair of his trousers in the bag. Now, needless to say, Alan was a little upset, as we all would be. And that was just like one of many, many major mistakes that were made. And Alan, because Jared was 3 years old, this got a lot of press in Colorado, and a lot of people stepped up, and a lot of big-time professional searchers volunteered their time, and some came down to the search location, met with Alan, and said, "Hey, we're here to help." And they were thwarted by Larimer County, and Alan couldn't quite understand why they kept pushing these people away. But nothing was found of Jared. And, I mean, it was a comprehensive, big-time search for weeks.
That's what I was wondering about, the question about mind control. And I know it's pretty far out there, but not only how it might affect people's decision to sort of wander away from the camp, or I'm going to take a little stroll down this trail and never come back, but also how it, law enforcement people do implausible, illogical sort of things in a kind of a cavalier manner. It's almost like something's manipulating the thought process. And I know that's pretty far out there, and we're already pretty far out there, but that's just what popped into my head when I hear these kind of stories.
I can understand that. So fast forward 4 years later, and there's some people that are hiking high above the Poudre River in the valley. When Jared was last seen, he was right next to the river talking to these fishermen. And you or I could cross this river. It's not that deep. But there was a lot of thought going into it. And, in fact, Alan was told, your son's going to be found in 4 years in the river. And he goes, well, why would you say that? I already told you he would never go near the river. And they said, no, he's going to be found 4 years from now in the river. Well, he is found 4 years later, but it's not in the river. It's over 500 feet straight up the side of this mountain. Now, my son is a Division I hockey player in fantastic shape. For me being an old man, I'm in pretty good shape. And it took us every ounce of effort to get into the location where Jared was found. And some hiker just happened to be hiking on the rim of this mountain next to the trail and came across some remains and some clothing. Now, this is four Colorado winters later, and I can tell you for a fact that the shoes that were found at that location look like they just came out of the store. His pants were found turned inside out. They found one tooth of Jared's sitting on top of a log, and then they found his cranium, not his lower, just his upper, sitting next to a tree upside down. That's all they found of Jared, a cranium and one tooth. And there was a lot of talk about this, and Alan was a very smart man. They found a sweatshirt that Jared was wearing, and it was almost intact. He showed the sweatshirt to some mountain lion trackers and experts and said, what does this look like to you? And they go, well, your son wasn't attacked by a mountain lion, because they would have gone, eaten right through that shirt, and they would have gone straight into his torso. And the pants being turned inside out didn't make any sense. The shoes being on top of that mountain made no sense. And the reason being is that Jared never, ever tied his shoes, and they were always on his feet loose. And when I was doing the research on this and I saw the photos of where these shoes were found, I thought the same thing. If any animal is going to drag them up that hill, those shoes were going to fall off in the first 10 feet. And in talking to Alan, his dad, Alan said, Dave, there's no way he was dragged up that mountain, because those shoes wouldn't have stayed on.
In the you know, in the world of UFO abductions, there are some, they're almost humorous stories. The ones you're describing are not humorous, obviously, but there's some humorous stories about people who are taken, then they're returned, and they're wearing someone else's clothing, or they've got the shoes on the wrong feet, or it's the shirt is buttoned in a way they wouldn't do it. This reminds me of it. I remember when your first book came out, you had some cases where there was some really strange stuff that happened with clothing. That it was sort of like folded or found in weird spots. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Absolutely. And, you know, in talking, I've been a MUFON investigator for 12 years. So I try to keep a broad spectrum on all these things. And you're exactly right. I thought the same thing when I looked at the clothing and the patterns. And there was a boy who disappeared in Great Smoky Mountains National Park. He's a Boy Scout, and he was last in line. And they were marching out, and he disappeared. Huge search. And 8 days after he disappears, they're along a larger creek, small river, And out in the middle of this, in the middle of winter, there's a foot of snow on the ground. In the middle of the creek that's flowing, there's a large boulder. And on the boulder is the boy's backpack and all of his clothing neatly folded on the boulder. And they're seeing this, and it's a bizarre scene because nobody's going to walk into the middle of that river and fold clothes in the middle of winter. So they go further up the river, and later on that day, they find the boy at the base of a tree with his pants pulled down to his ankles. Now, what was important about that story to me, yeah, the clothes were important, but that was also the second case of a young man being found in a national park in the middle of absolutely nowhere with his pants pulled down to his knees, dead.
Now, your first inclination is that's kind of a creepy sex crime of some sort.
That's what you would think, but when you read the facts behind the event, there's no way it was anything along those lines. It was something completely abstract, not normal. The other case involved was at Crater Lake National Park. Again, not in any reports. You would never even know about this if I hadn't tracked down the ranger who met with some witnesses that found this scene in the middle of the wilderness. And he and his partner rode in, and they found at the end of a small box canyon, again in a creek, he stepped over a large down Douglas fir tree, and on the other side, he sees a pair of jeans, Levi's, that have been unbuckled, unzipped, and dropped down to a pair of socks. Again, this person had no boots on either, and the boots were never found. And this guy's name was Marion, and Marion said that Dave, he goes, I looked at this, and he goes, there's no flesh. Whatever happened here happened many years before, but the buckle was undone, the zipper was down, his underwear, the elastic of the underwear was still down on the ground. There was one broken tibia bone in the right leg. All other bones were gone. He found the top of the cranium about 15 feet away. And no boots. And he goes, there were no boots anywhere, Dave. And he goes, in 35 years of doing this, I've never not found boots with a body. And he said that he and his partner were so uncomfortable with what they saw there that they backed out, went back to their headquarters, called the FBI in Portland, and said, you guys need to send an evidence response team into our park and work this scene and explain what happened.
It's as if this it, we'll call it an it, wants to mess with people's heads. It almost looks like it's done on purpose. Let's throw them this little tidbit and watch them scramble and see how it puzzles them. It's like a mind game.
Well, and the disturbing part to this for me is that we have a group like the National Park Service who understands that these things are occurring, and they're not informing us to be more careful, to stay in pairs, maybe even mandate that you hike in pairs. And they're not trying to protect us.
We'll get into that more. And also, we had the three cases of these men who were in these ski resorts and disappeared. Three women, who the similarities are pretty eerie. We'll get into that when we come back. Fleetwood Mac takes us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM. Green Grass and High Tides from 1975, a signature song for an absolutely great southern rock band, The Outlaws. We're talking with Dave Politis about his series of books, Missing 411. And I'll tell you, we can talk for hours about this, but until you've read these books, you really can't get a handle on just how big and how complicated this is. If you're interested in any of them or all of them, we've got a link on our website. You might want to check those out. When we come back, we'll talk about three women who disappeared under eerily similar circumstances. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Dave, I had several of our listeners have sent me news stories from today, n developments that sort of sound like they might be related. One is the National Park Service for Yosemite has put out a note on its Facebook page, I guess, saying they've got a missing hiker and a search is underway. The second story is a news report out of Washington State that bones have been found, and they're speculating that it might be there's a family, I guess, a family of four has been missing since last May. I don't know if either of these cases, if you're following them or have any idea whether they might be related to the same phenomena. Any thoughts?
I think what they're referring to on the Washington case is actually an Alaska case of four people, a family that disappeared there about a year ago. And about 2 miles from their house, they found some people found some bones and some clothing, and I think they're looking into it. It hasn't been confirmed it's them yet. But I know that the FBI actually got that case, and they were dumbfounded about what happened to the family. So I don't know about that. And the Yosemite case, I looked at that this afternoon, and the implication from the Park Service was is that that guy probably fell into the Merced River because he was last seen on a footbridge above the river. And I think that's what the implication was there.
I guess I'm just surprised that the Park Service even has a Facebook page and that they would use it to post a message that says somebody is missing. You get the idea that they don't even want to draw any attention whatsoever to something like that.
Yeah, but I think at that beginning point, you got family people
Yeah.
staring you in the face. You have relatives coming into town. There's a lot of pressure there to do something and to get the publicity out. So I think it's hard to turn it down at that point. When people go home, I think it's easier not to take the call, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Let's talk about the, I'm sorry.
One thing quickly, George, I just want to bring up because I had three emails about this, is that people were asking why we are charging so much for our books. And what they were doing is they were going to Amazon and they're seeing that the books are anywhere between $90 and $100. Well, we don't sell on Amazon, and those are resellers that are trying to gouge the public where they wouldn't be able to find our books at our website. So that's not us that are selling the books that high. I just
Yeah.
want to put that out there.
We've got a link. Anybody who wants to buy them can buy them from Dave directly. They're great and it certainly don't cost $90. Dave, let's talk about we talk about the three guys at the ski resorts who vanished under weird circumstances, pretty similar. You've got three women, similar kind of connections. Tell me about them.
So each of these women, I'll talk about the hikers because the time frames and the circumstances are really, really similar. First one is a woman that disappeared on Victoria Island in Strathcona National Park in Canada. Sylvia Apps, 69 years old. She went missing July 11th, 2014 in the Comox Valley. Super, super experienced, super good health. Left for a hike from Paradise Meadows on July 8th. She signed into a log book and she summited Castle Craig. And she failed to arrive at a pickup point on July 13th, and that's what started the search. They found hikers that saw her just south of Castle Craig Mountain on the 11th. Now, what's interesting about this case is what they found, not what they didn't find. Searchers went in there, and in one location along a ridge line, they found her cell phone. Another location, they found her walking poles. Another location, they found her camera. And then they found her backpack. And they don't, to quote the search and rescue people, they don't know why they were in the positions they were in, but they thought that they were going to find her imminently because of the scattered property. Now, the SAR commander, search and rescue commander, a guy named Paul Berry, this is what he said. He said, it has provided a roller coaster for both the family and the SAR teams. Clues you think are pointing in the right direction don't pan out to give you anything. And I have heard that statement many times before from other search and rescue commanders. And he says that we feel like we're getting close and then come up with nothing. It's very mystifying. He said that the lady is tough as nails, and if anyone could survive, she could. 150 searchers, canine teams, helicopters with forward-looking infrared radar. They searched until July 21st, then they gave it up. And then the search commander stated this is the first time in his career where they found all of the person's supplies and they didn't find the victim. Now, this area of Vancouver Island is beautiful, big mountains, high up on these mountains. There's no trees. It's above tree line. Weather conditions at the time were very warm, and they were concerned that she might have problems with the heat, and because it was unusually warm. Now, keep the profile in mind. She's a 69-year-old lady, July 11th, 2014, in Canada at a national park. Now, back up 12 days, June 18th, 2014, a woman named Karen Sykes. This is a really, really unusual case. She's a marathon runner. She's 70 years old. She was described by the Seattle Times as the guru of the trails. Nobody knew more about Mount Rainier National Park and its trail system than her. She hiked 2 times per week. She had written articles for local newspapers and magazines. She'd written a book about safety on the trails. This is the woman who knew everything about it. She was hiking with a friend. The friend got a little tired when on the trail they reached snow. And he said, "I'm going to stop." She said she was just going to go a little further up the trail and she'd be right back. She was never seen by this guy again. They were hiking an area called Ojai Lakes Trail, and it's in the northeast corner of Rainier. The partner hiked back down the trail, eventually got a hold of rangers at 10:30 that night, and a 3-day search started. Now, it was stated that she was carrying gear to spend the night overnight in an emergency if she has to. Now, don't think that's strange, because anybody out there should be carrying some kind of emergency blanket or something to crawl into just in case you have to spend the night out somewhere. So she was doing everything right. Now, they started an intensive 3-day search. On the third day, a helicopter found her in an area that was highly unusual. She had to climb up over the top of a 6,200-foot ridge, walk halfway down an adjacent valley in a gully of Boundary Creek. She was found walking, well, no, she had to have walked through snow, and she could have turned around and followed her path back if she had been paying attention, and of course she would have been. But in the area she was in, she was found in this gully where there was no snow. In essence, she went uphill and then went downhill. She died of hypothermia, and her friend stated she was the last person in the world that would have ever gotten lost on Rainier. The Park Service even made a statement. This is their quote: "She was found in an area that was difficult to access and not commonly traveled."
And the fact that she goes up and not down, I mean, that's you've repeated over and over again. You see that all over the place.
Yeah. And there's no, they couldn't track her. They didn't track her. They found her by helicopter, just on a general grid search of the area. Now, okay, so we have a 69-year-old disappears on July 11th. We have a 70-year-old that disappeared 12 days later on June 18th. Now, in my book that I wrote about that I got out last year, wrote about a woman 66 years old, Geraldine Largay, disappeared on the Appalachian Trail in Maine. Her and her husband George married 32 years from Brentwood, Tennessee. Great relationship. She always wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail. Super experienced hiker in super good shape. So her husband George was going to be her support system, and they would meet at designated points along the trail, and they'd spend the night sometimes. He'd restock her with food, you know, just exactly what a great support system should be doing. Well, her goal was to get to Mount Cattenden in Baxter Park. Total trip would have been 1,150 miles, and she had completed 950 miles. On July 22nd, 2013, she sent George a text saying she was 8 miles from her next stop and would be arriving on time on July 23rd. The 22nd, it rained heavily on the trail where Geraldine was located and where she would have texted from. Well, George shows up on the 23rd. She doesn't show up. Her husband calls Maine's Warden Service, and there's a TV show about Maine Warden Service law enforcement. And they actually did an entire show on this case a few months ago. And it was excellent because it showed how comprehensive the search was, how frustrated they were, and they found nothing. They didn't find her backpack, nothing. A 3-week search, and they went the distance on this one. And they described it as mystifying. The cell phone that she had either broke or was out of batteries because they pinged it and they didn't get anything. Now, all of these women were older in age. All were in outstanding physical condition. Two of the three have never been found. The third one is somebody that would have been the last person in the world to disappear. She knew the trail system like you know the road to and from your nearest market. The idea that she disappeared and wasn't found is illogical.
That really just seems like someone, something is just messing with us to pick her of to pick her of all people.
Yeah, if you were going to pick somebody to make an example that, hey, no one's immune, that would have been her.
You also had three cases that you discussed that maybe we would talk about tonight of women, ski resort women.
So these were not, these actually were women on a slightly different scale, but all of these cases mimic each other in a strange way. And first case involves a physician, Telica Patrick, 30 years old. She was working at the Borges Medical Center in Western Michigan University. She was a first-year psychiatric department resident. Went to a hotel trying to get a room to get some sleep. She couldn't. The hotel was full. She had her driver take her back to the medical center to get her car. She gets her car and she starts driving down I-94 near Lake Michigan. Her car, she doesn't show up at her residence and she doesn't show up the next day at work. They report her missing. Her car is found in a ditch with a flat tire on I-94 in Porter, Indiana, 1 mile the way the crow flies from Lake Michigan, and Burns Harbor is less than a half mile away. Now, one of the things I haven't talked about extensively, but I'm going to now, is that many, 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 many of these cases involve water of some type. And I mean a river, a creek is nearby, a lake, a pond, the ocean. Now, in this case, Lake Michigan is right near, less than a mile away, and there's also a large, large pond on the other side of the fence next to the freeway where her car was. It's called Lake Charles. And the FBI, this is strange. Why the FBI got involved in this case is the million-dollar question. But they did. They say they don't get involved in missing persons cases unless it's a very young person or unless there's some kind of criminality that goes along with it. But they got involved, and they and Indiana law enforcement searched this pond for 3 days. They found nothing. Her wallet, her credit cards, and her cash were all found in her car undisturbed. Now, she went missing on December 5th, 2013. Her body is found in that same pond 4 months later, 5 months later, on April 6th, by a fisherman. And the family demanded to know why the canines only tracked her from her car to the shoulder of the freeway and stopped, and why her body wasn't found in the pond when it was searched. Now, there's so many parts of this that fit what I've talked about already tonight. Canines can't find the body. The scent doesn't go anywhere. The body's found in a location that had been searched thoroughly by multiple agencies. And the family's asking the same questions that you and I would ask. Now, they didn't release the autopsy on this, and that was troubling to me because an autopsy like this is going to show the state of decomposition of the body, ocular changes to the person, was there skin slippage? How long was that body in the water? Did she still have hair on her head after being in water 4 months? All these kind of things are unanswered because they won't let us see the autopsy report. And then the really good question to me is, what was the interest of the FBI in this when it was classified from the very beginning as just a missing person?
Yeah, I can see if there's a kidnapping involved, they would have jurisdiction, but That's weird. Now, I don't remember there ever being a vehicular type case in any of your previous books. So you've got another one.
Correct. I wrote about this in the last book. Letitia Marie Faust, 50-year-old woman, lived in Patrick County, Virginia. A graduate of the University of North Carolina, she was a pharmaceutical sales rep, very, very smart lady, considered by all people to be well-read. She had a real close relationship with her mom. Her mom was elderly. On December 9, 2009, she was in her 1994 Honda Accord in Floyd County, Virginia, going to the pharmacy to pick up some supplies for her mom. After she did the shopping, she called her mom, told her she was coming home to drop the stuff off for her. She didn't return that night, and her mom called the sheriff. Huge search. Completely out of character for Letitia to do this. Her car was eventually found on the Blue Ridge Parkway on a street called Walnut Ridge Drive in Franklin County, described as a very, very remote area. I know that if I'm in law enforcement, I find that car, I'm going to be thinking she was carjacked, murdered, and dumped. Well, they played it the right way, except that they found her wallet, all the food, her purse, her money in the car, all not disturbed. And hold on to your hats here. The searchers found her sandals she was wearing halfway between her car and a half-acre pond that was on the property where her car was found. So the sheriff gets out four robotic cameras, and three separate dive teams search that pond, and they find nothing. And this area, there's a street, this Walnut Grove, kind of extends out into the valley, almost like an overlook. When she disappeared, it was freezing rain and snow, and that hampered the search efforts for that following week. And they stated blatantly that they had no idea what happened to her. One of the unusual things was, and think about this thoroughly, freezing rain, kind of snowing when she disappears, yet her window is rolled down on the driver's side. And I talk in the book and I said, now what would cause you to roll down your window if you were alone? Now, if you're a female, you may not roll it down all the way if somebody walked up to the car.
Right.
But if you saw something and you were trying to hear something, maybe you would roll down the window if that felt safe. And
Yeah,
I
like a
can't think of
cop or
what.
something. Yeah. I tell you what, Dave, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're going to need to take a short break. We'll come back, and you have a third case that relates to the two you just shared with us that is pretty spooky. We'll be right back with more of our conversation with Dave Politis, and we'll be opening up the phone lines in just a bit. Stay with us.